the Georgia Radio Reading Service.
That's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us for the Noon Book Hour. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow for our next installment from the Recording Library of West Texas.
Next, on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the coronavirus update, followed by USA Today at 2.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas community update.
How sick are you? Midland Memorial Hospital offers a nurse triage program, 68 Nurse. The program is designed to help people determine whether their health situation warrants a trip to the emergency room. Midland residents can call the line by dialing 686-8773. The program is free and available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Local nurses are available to help you determine the best place to receive care for your situation. 68 Nurse can help you save time and money by directing you to the most appropriate healthcare option, whether it's a neighborhood clinic, urgent care center, emergency room, or just staying home. 686-8773.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 70 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-50s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Thank you for listening to Enable This Week. During this pandemic and during this winter season, do you find yourself cooking more or less? Are you just opening a box or a can? Or do you find yourself peeling and chopping and simmering and serving? Actually, either way, you should be aware of how to keep safe in your kitchen. I have compiled a lot of tips for you about just that, how to keep safe in the kitchen. The information comes from a website, www.visionaware.com, and their headline reads, Safe Cooking Techniques for Cooks Who Are Blind or Have Low Vision. In the article first, there is a list of safe cooking tips. Wear short sleeves or roll your sleeves up above the elbow when you're working around the stove. Wear oven mitts to handle pots and pans. Set a timer to remind you when to turn off the stove and other electrical appliances. Make sure all your appliances are in good working order and avoid overloading circuits. Next, use a vegetable peeler instead of a knife for peeling fruits and vegetables. Use a pizza cutter rather than a knife for cutting, or you can use a pivot knife that's connected to a cutting board. And I questioned that. I wondered what it was, and there's a picture here explaining it. It says, to make chopping easier and safer, use a flexible arm task lamp, which is located right next to the cutting board, for extra light, and use a cutting board with an attached pivot knife for safety, and a white cutting board that contrasts with this red apple. And that's what the picture shows, a red apple on a white cutting board. The pivot knife is attached at the corner of the cutting board, and it swivels to the left and to the right, and of course it also swivels up and down. The list continues though and says, don't store spices on a shelf above the stove. Next one, always turn off the gas flame before you remove a pan from the burner. And then another one, don't wear clothing with long loose sleeves when you're cooking. The next section is called cutting and chopping. Here's some tips for you. Use trays or cutting boards in colors that contrast with your food. For example, keep a white cutting board for slicing apples or carrots and a dark colored cutting board for things like onions. Now here there's a picture and it shows an ingenious invention, I think. It's a two-sided cutting board. It's white on one side and black on the other. And it says use the white side of the cutting board for darker colored foods like eggplant or broccoli, and use the black side for lighter colored foods such as onions or cheese. The list continues, make sure the cutting edge of your knife blade is facing downward before you cut or slice. And here's a good tip. You can identify which edge is the cutting edge of the knife without actually touching it. The cutting edge is usually curved, so you can try rocking the knife blade forward and backward on the table to determine when the cutting edge, which will rock back and forth when that cutting edge is facing downward. And the next tip, I think it's a great one. Use a pizza cutter instead of a knife for slicing sandwiches. The next set of tips is all about measuring. There's a picture here showing an array of measuring cups and spoons that are available, all with large print or tactile or contrasting markings. There's some tips that say use a measuring cup with raised numbers on the side, or you can actually mark your cup with a 3D pen, such as the name brand Highmark tactile pen, or what they call a spot and line pen. These are 3D plastic liquids that make raised lines, dots, and shapes. You use them to identify clothing, canned goods, frozen goods, mark settings on appliances. And I frequently call them puffy paints, which is a sort of a generic term that I sort of made up. Another tip here, use individually sized or stacking measuring cups to scoop out your desired amounts. Another tip, measure spices into your hand first to avoid pouring into a spoon. So actually what they're saying, I think, is dump a pile of it into your hand and then use your measuring spoon to scoop it out of your hand. You can probably put the rest of it back into the container. And you can also use measuring spoons that have large numbers. The next set of tips is about pouring, and it's divided into a section on cold liquids, some advice about electronic devices, and then a section on hot liquids. So the first section on cold liquids. Again, use color contrast. Dark pitchers and dark servers for milk and other light-colored liquids. You could use a white pitcher for dark liquids such as iced tea. When pouring into a glass, they suggest that you locate the pitcher by trailing your hand along the table. You find the pitcher. And then you locate the spout on the pitcher by moving your hand up the pitcher and then find the spout, and then you turn the pitcher until the spout faces the glass that you're aiming for. With your other hand, move the glass toward the pitcher, keeping your index finger on the spout of the pitcher. Lift the pitcher slightly and touch the spout to the rim of the glass. Now hook your other index finger over the rim of the glass, so that just your fingertip is inside the glass. Pour until you can feel the water or other liquid reaching your index finger. Also, you can listen for sound changes as the liquid reaches the top of the glass. You can also try pouring with a pitcher in the sink and the glass or cup on the adjoining countertop. This can make it easier to lift the pitcher or the kettle and can help with spills or cleanup. Try practicing with empty containers first, and then also you could pour over a tray to catch any spills. Next, the section on electronic devices for pouring. You may prefer to use an electronic liquid level indicator. There's one that's called the Say When device. This is a battery-operated device, and it's placed at the top of a cup or a glass, and it beeps when the liquid reaches the top. There's a picture here showing a rather novel use for this gadget. It's called the Say When gadget. It shows a woman's hand holding a cup, reaching into the liquid dispenser on the front of her refrigerator. She's holding the cup under the dispenser, but the Say When device is hanging on the side of the cup. So even in that situation, the device will tell her when the liquid is coming to the top. And by the way, there are other brands for these liquid sensors. You could shop around for that. Next, we come to the hot liquid category, pouring hot liquids. The Sunbeam, here's a name brand, the Sunbeam Hot Shot Beverage Maker. This heats 12 ounces of water in about 90 seconds at the touch of a button. It makes piping hot water for coffee, cereals, soup, cocoa, or tea. That's the Hot Shot Beverage Maker by Sunbeam, 12 ounces of water in 90 seconds. And then there's another alternative. You could microwave one cup of water. It takes about 2 or 2.5 minutes. They suggest pre-measure the desired quantity of water and you could pour it through your automatic coffee maker with the filter basket in place. Another idea, you could fill a kettle with the desired amount of water. You would measure first, like 1 cup, and then put it into your kettle before you heat it and then pour it. You could also use one of those electronic liquid level indicators that we just talked about. The next section is all about peeling. Use a vegetable peeler rather than a knife. Hold the fruit or vegetable in one hand, the peeler in the other hand. Grasp the handle with your thumb on one side and your fingers on the other. Don't touch the moving rod inside the peeler. Hold the item at a 45-degree angle, and working on one half of the fruit or vegetable, start to peel on the surface away from your body. Once the peelings have been removed, check the section with your index finger to see if it is smooth. Peel until the half you're working on is finished, and then you flip the food item so that the unpeeled portion is now facing upward, and continue your peeling. To determine whether you have any peel left, run cold water over the fruit or vegetable and feel the surface with your fingertips. The next bunch of tips is all about placing pans on a burner. Always position the pan correctly on the burner before you turn the stove on. Always turn off the burner before you remove the pan. Make sure the handles on the pots and pans and knobs on the lids are heat resistant. Make sure the handles are turned inward when cooking so you will not accidentally bump or knock your pots and pans off to the floor. Also, be sure that the handle of the pan is not protruding over another burner. There is a special section that I've inserted here. It's all about using a flat top stove after vision loss. One of the most widely used items found in modern kitchens today is a flat top stove. Flat top stoves do not have to be a nightmare for people living with blindness. While they do present some unique challenges, they can be more beneficial than using a coil top stove because they're easy to clean and level surfaces provide more stability for the pots. When using a flat top stove, use pots and pans that have flat bottoms to increase level placement and even cooking. Pots that are weighted to increase stability are recommended. Not all flat top stoves are set up in the same way. And a point here for all of these tips, a certified vision rehabilitation therapist can teach you safe techniques for determining burner placement and if the stove is on. And remember to always observe the general rules of safe cooking, such as turning off the heat before moving a pot or skillet, and clearing the stovetop before use. Always think safety first. Now we come to some specific flat top stove hints. About centering a pan. Try to remain aware of your body position whenever you work at the stove, the flat top stove especially. Keep your body aligned with the front edge of the stovetop. Before you start, check if any burners are on by using what's called the safety zone technique to scan the stovetop. And the safety zone technique is as follows. You bend your arm so that your forearm is across your chest. Touch your opposite shoulder with your fingertips. Now you take that same arm and extend it out in front of your body, still at shoulder height. Lower your arm slowly, passing it over the stovetop area, feeling for any heat. Don't lower your arm past your midriff. If you can't feel any heat, then the stovetop is safe to work on. Here are some techniques to help you center a pot on your flat glass or ceramic cooktop. In many cases, using the safety zone technique that I just mentioned to scan the stovetop and feel the heat can give you an accurate idea of the location of the burner. You can measure the distance from the front and the side edges of the stovetop to the burner with a wooden spoon or a chopstick or some other long-handled utensil, and then mark the distance on the handle with a piece of tape, or you could file a notch in the wooden tool, or you can use a marking material such as those Highmark tactile pens, or something called Maxi Marks, or what they call a spot and line pen, those puffy paint things. You mark the distance to the burner from the edge of the stove. Place the pot on the stove pot and use the measurements on this utensil to check that the front and side edges of the pot are centered on the burner. And now after this, we'll go back to the main article and have some tips about baking. The first one is to make sure the oven racks are positioned correctly before you turn on the oven. Next, always turn off the heat before removing items from the oven. Next, when removing items, pull the oven rack partially out rather than you reaching into the oven. And remember to push the rack back in and close the oven door as soon as possible after placing the item on a counter or other surface. Next, pretty obvious, use long, heat-proof oven mitts to remove items from the oven. And next, know where you are going to place the hot item before you remove it from the oven. So you checked your adjoining surfaces to find out where it's going to go. And next, oven doors that open downward are safer than ones that open to the side. And finally, in this section, always use an audible timer for when you are baking. Next, we come to this section about turning foods. This says it's generally easier to use a double spatula as a turning device. I was fascinated by this. I figured two spatulas held together, how's that going to be helpful? But no, they actually make them. There are two spatulas that are joined at the top, and they have like a springy hinge at the top, so you can pinch them together, turn the object, and then turn them back over, and then unspring them. They cost anywhere from $12 to $15 at a store like Walmart or Amazon. They're found elsewhere, too. This is a double spatula. I think I might get myself one. And the directions for using this double spatula, first of all, you slide the item to the side of the pan, and then you slide the bottom spatula underneath it. With the spatula, clamp it down, clap the top one down on it, and with the double spatula, you move the item to the center of the pan before you flip it over. And then make sure you have one hand on the handle of the pan to prevent tipping. The next section is called Testing Foods for Doneness. If you were a seasoned cook before you experienced your vision loss, you most likely relied on many different techniques to determine when something was done. You certainly didn't depend on your sight alone. So while food timers and talking thermometers and other devices will help you compensate for vision loss in your kitchen, you can also learn to lean more heavily on skills and senses that you've probably been using for years. Here's a tip. Use touch carefully to determine when a cake has finished baking, or use the toothpick test where you insert a toothpick into the cake, and if you feel batter sticking to the toothpick, the cake is not done yet. Next, here's one I hadn't heard of. Listen to your French fries. When they stop sputtering in their oil, you know they're done. Next one, many foods smell a certain way when they're cooked. Learn to recognize the signals that your other senses are sending to you. The next section is about spreading things, how to spread things. Practice with toast. It won't tear as easily as regular bread. With thick spreads like peanut butter or margarine, set up an organized pattern to spread, either outward from a certain point, you can go left to right, always, you could go top to bottom, or you could put your peanut butter in the middle and spread it from the center to the outside to all the edges. Set up an organized pattern to spread. Or you can touch the food to make sure that the spreading is complete. Some people find it easier to spread with the back of a spoon instead of a knife. And if you can't see how much butter is on the butter dish, glide your knife blade very gently across the top of the butter to get an idea of where to cut into it. The next few tips are for serving. Ask what dish you are receiving if you're sitting at a table. Ask what dish it is that you are receiving, and when you pass it on, you can tell the next person what dish it is. This will serve as a reminder to other people at the table to identify the dishes as they're passing them. When serving yourself, run your fingertips around the top rim of the bowl to locate the serving spoon. If possible, place the serving dish on the table next to your plate. If not, hold the serving dish just above your plate and a bit to the side. This will make the transfer of food easier. When you're done serving yourself, it's okay to ask, "Where can I set this dish down?" The next section is about adapting cookbooks and recipes. Cookbooks, you probably know this, cookbooks are available in Braille, large print, and even recorded versions. If you have a computer and printer, your own recipes can be typed and printed in as large a font as you need, or they can actually be handwritten in large print with a bold line marker. They're suggesting a flexible arm task lamp and a reading stand can help you position your reading materials like a recipe card and have the proper lighting for it. Flexible arm task lamp. And then they're also suggesting that sometimes a transparent yellow acetate overlay can make print easier to read. Low vision devices such as magnifiers, task lighting, and reading stands, and electronic and digital magnifiers can also help you read your cookbooks and your recipes. Now we come to some useful tools and small appliances. There are many simple, inexpensive tools you may find helpful in the kitchen. Here's just a beginning. Of course, we mentioned earlier, you've got to have a pair of long oven mitts. And you should also have a kitchen timer with raised markings or very large print that you can see. Think about getting a liquid level indicator. Also look for a safety food turner. This is the fancy name for that double spatula that I'm fascinated with. A safety food turner. Also think about buying a spatter shield if you're frying something. Put it over your foods and keep the spatters down. Look for a cutting board with food chute for pouring. My cutting board has sort of a handle hole in the end, and I'll frequently hold that hole over the dish where I want to scrape my cut objects into. That works too. They're also suggesting cutting boards in light and dark colors to contrast with food. And don't forget about that one that's white on one side and black on the other. Look for that. Next, they're suggesting individual measuring cups and spoons. If you need a half a cup measure, have the half a cup measure be separate so you don't have to read the side of the measuring cup to find out where the half is. You can also include a large print or broad-handled measuring cup. Look for an adjustable knife with a slicing guide for adjusting the size of your slices. Also, definitely look for the 3D pen, what they call Highmark, for marking your appliances or that generic puffy paint. You can look for a card or barcode reader for creating labels that can be read back to you. You can also invest in a boil control disc to keep foods from boiling over. This works especially well for rice or pasta, a boil control disc. They're quite inexpensive. I think if I remember right, they're like $3, $4, or $5, a boil control disc that you put into your pot. And then also think about a tomato or vegetable slicer. Now next, we have another whole section that I found from the Vision Aware website. There are some duplicates included in here. I hope you'll excuse me for that. This whole section is called Hints for Easier Eating and Pouring. First of all, they say use the clock reference system. You probably have heard of this one. One way to tell what food is on your plate or where the food is on your plate is to use the clock reference system. Think of your plate as a clock face with 12 o'clock at the top. This is the edge that's farthest away from you, and 6 o'clock at the bottom, the edge that's closest to you. This reference system can help you to form a mental picture of where each food item is located on your plate. Next, we have some additional eating skills and tips. Use a tray or placemat to help maintain your orientation to your place setting. Place a napkin in your lap to protect your clothing, of course. Next, use a locating technique to explore your place setting safely, effectively, and discreetly. When returning a cup to a saucer, locate the saucer with one hand and place the cup with your other hand. Next, use your fork and the tip of your knife to check the location and arrangement of the food on your plate periodically. Push food items back toward the center of your plate if they've gravitated outward toward the edges. Use solid foods such as mashed potatoes as a buffer or a barrier to help push food onto your fork. You can also use a knife or a piece of bread as a buffer. The tip of your knife can also give you an indication of the size of the piece of meat or any other food item that requires cutting. Sort of poke around with that tip. The weight of the food on your fork or spoon can help indicate the size of your portion. When scooping with a fork, press the tines down into and under your food. You will feel sort of a dragging sensation if the food item, like a piece of meat, is not fully cut and severed from the main piece. Next, we have some tips for cutting meat. Make sure the cutting edge of your knife blade is facing downward before you cut or slice. We mentioned this before. You can identify the cutting edge of the knife blade without touching it. The cutting edge is usually curved, so you can try rocking the knife blade forward and backward on the tabletop to determine which is the cutting edge. And then here's another idea for that. If you place the non-cutting edge against the tabletop, the knife will be flush against the surface and will not rock. You can try turning your plate so that your meat is at the 6 o'clock position. If you're not reaching over other foods, it can sometimes make cutting easier. To cut meat, such as a pork or a lamb chop, locate one edge of the meat with your knife and keep your knife there. Put your fork into the chop about a half inch from the edge and, starting at the edge, cut a small semicircle around your fork. Keep your knife at the edge of the meat. With very little practice, this will become automatic. When placing your order at a restaurant, here's a good one, ask to have your meat cut before it's brought to the table. Now, some tips about using salt and pepper. Here are some techniques to help. Number one, salt weighs more than the equivalent amount of pepper. The salt shaker usually has larger perforations. Salt has a different sound when shaken because the textures of salt and pepper are different. Salt sounds looser and more granular than pepper. Use different shaped shakers for each or place a rubber band around one. To control the flow of salt, shake some into the palm of your hand and you can explore the amount with your pinky finger. Next, some tips about pouring hot and cold liquids. Electronic liquid level indicators that we mentioned earlier in the program can help you pour hot and cold liquids by making a persistent noise and or vibrating when the liquid in a glass or cup is a certain distance from the top rim. To reduce spilling, place the lip of the container you are pouring from against the rim of the container you are pouring into. Pour slowly at first and gradually increase your speed as your skills improve with practice. Here's a good one. You can become aware of the temperature change on the side of a glass or a cup as the liquid rises in the glass or the cup. They're suggesting that you practice with a variety of containers and never hold the cup or glass in the air while you're pouring. Instead, place the cup or the glass on a level surface. This helps to avoid spills and burns. If you have low vision, use color contrast to make liquids more visible. Use a light-colored mug for your dark-colored coffee, or use a darker glass or cup for your milk. And here's the best idea of all for pouring hot and cold liquids. When entertaining friends or family, ask each person to pour his or her own beverage. If you would like additional instruction on eating and cooking skills, you can always contact a vision rehabilitation therapist for additional instruction. So to summarize today's program, I hope you have picked up on at least one new good idea that will keep you safe in your kitchen while you are peeling, chopping, simmering, and serving. I think right now I should say bon appetit. And to end the program, I have a quote for you to think about. Of course, it's from Julia Child, who said, "This is my advice to people. Learn how to cook, try new recipes, learn from your mistakes, be fearless, and above all, have fun." Julia McWilliams Child was born August 15, 1912, in Pasadena, California. She died in 2004. She was an American cooking teacher, author, and television personality. She was best known for bringing French cooking to the American people with her cookbook, Mastering the Art of French Cooking. Now, you probably remember that she was tall, 6'2" tall, to be exact. Julia Child, an American legend. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your coronavirus update from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael, and it is Monday, February 22nd, 2021. And may I say, it is wonderful to be back with you, to have power and internet connectivity so we can do these broadcasts once again. First, I'll give you a rundown on some of the articles that we'll be reading in the upcoming minutes. Dr. Fauci explains comments about wearing masks into 2022. This may be the most crucial week yet on U.S. COVID-19 relief. Here's what we expect in Congress. Novavax says enrollment of its Phase 3 COVID-19 vaccine trial in U.S. and Mexico is complete. Sanofi and GSK start Phase 2 trial of their vaccine, and Phase 3 could begin by April. There's still huge amounts we don't know about long-term COVID. Evidence looks good that vaccines will reduce virus transmission, says UK minister. And we'll also have a Texas Tribune article about the coronavirus vaccine deliveries to Texas that are picking up after the winter storm. First, we'll look at the numbers, and these come from the Texas Health and Human Services. For Ector County, confirmed cases, 8,161. Probable cases, 7,455. Fatalities, 316. Estimated active cases, 1,526. Estimated recovered, 13,774. In Midland County, confirmed cases, 16,140. Fatalities, 236. Estimated active cases, 917. Estimated recovered, 14,987. And from the Texas Tribune, winter storm and power outages delay vaccinations and reporting of coronavirus data. Vaccine doses administered decreased. An average of 17,733 vaccine doses have been administered each day in the last week. As of February 20th, 4.6% of Texans have been fully vaccinated. Hospitalizations decreased by 961 patients compared with a week ago. As of February 21st, 7,146 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. New cases. On February 21st, 3,617 new confirmed cases and 642 new probable cases were reported. New deaths. On February 21st, 130 new deaths were reported. Now, here are coronavirus briefs. After hitting an almost unimaginable highs of hundreds of thousands of new cases a day over the winter holidays, the coronavirus infection rate in the United States has plummeted to levels not seen since the fall, with a seven-day rolling average under 65,000. However, the good news, possibly due to rising vaccinations, seasonal virus patterns, or increased adherence to restrictions, pales in comparison to the grim toll of the pandemic that will hit 500,000 deaths on Monday. Yet, deaths too are falling. COVID-19 fatalities are almost 13% lower this week than last week, and hospitalizations are down 15%. The brutal winter surge may be slowing and vaccinations gaining pace, but experts warn that there is still a long way to go in the fight. Top infectious disease expert Anthony S. Fauci cautioned that masks might still be needed in 2022 and refused to predict when normal would return. Social media misinformation is driving vaccine safety doubts among women of childbirthing age. Health officials worry their hesitation affect efforts to reach immunization targets. President Biden and Vice President Harris will observe a moment of silence on Monday evening to honor the victims of the pandemic. The Biden administration re-emphasized that educators do not need to be vaccinated before schools reopen, putting it at odds with some teachers' unions. In the United States, the virus has claimed nearly as many lives as the population of Atlanta. How can we grasp such a number? What if we imagined all those people traveling as one group, or killed in action, or all buried together? The U.S. is nearing 500,000 COVID-19 deaths, even as new cases are falling sharply across the country and the vaccine effort cranks up. Now we'll begin our articles, and we'll take the first article from the Texas Tribune. Coronavirus vaccine deliveries to Texas pick up after winter storm, by Perla Treviso, published February 20th. Texas will get nearly 600,000 first doses of the COVID-19 vaccine for next week, allowing the state to distribute the vaccine to the largest number of counties so far. The vaccines will be shipped to 563 providers in 230 counties across Texas, including 84,240 doses for large vaccine clinics in Harris, Dallas, and Tarrant counties, supported by the federal government, according to the Texas Department of State and Health Services. The state will also order about 360,000 to be used as second doses for people who are already vaccinated, especially those whose appointments were delayed by the winter storm, DSHS said in a news release. This week's storm delayed the delivery of hundreds of thousands of doses that were scheduled to arrive, preventing what might have been 1 million injections by hundreds of providers this week. More than 100,000 first doses and 300,000 second doses that were supposed to be delivered this week are still awaiting shipment due to weather conditions around out-of-state warehouses and across the country, according to the Federal Vaccine Tracking System. More than 3 million people in Texas have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, and nearly 1.3 million are fully vaccinated, state officials reported Friday. Now, here are some national articles. Fauci explains comments about wearing masks into 2022, from CNN's Naomi Thomas. Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, said again on Monday that Americans might be wearing masks into 2022. And although there may be far less spread of the coronavirus, people must be prepared for the possibility of another surge of cases. On Sunday, Fauci told CNN's Dana Bash on State of the Union that it was possible that people could be wearing masks into 2022. The point I was trying to make is that people ask you to make a projection when there are so many variables in there that are unpredictable, Fauci told Gail King on CBS This Morning on Monday. So when I said we might be, I didn't say we absolutely are going to be wearing them. I'm saying it is quite conceivable that if we actually go into the fall and the winter and there is still a degree of virus in the community, despite the fact that many people have been vaccinated, we certainly will likely, very likely, be much better off than we are now. But it is conceivable that there will be enough virus in the community that in order to be extra safe, we may have to be wearing masks under certain circumstances, he continued. That's the only point I was making. I was not trying to scare people. I'm saying we've got to be prepared that variables are there, and we can get another surge, Fauci added. While he said he doesn't think there will be another surge, and he hopes there won't be, the United States has to be prepared for one. That's what I meant by don't just give up on public health measures, because we're going in the right direction, Fauci said. This week may be the most crucial week yet on U.S. COVID-19 relief. Here's what we expect in Congress, from CNN's Lauren Fox. This week is President Biden's first big test as his massive relief COVID-19 relief bill comes together on the Hill with very little bipartisan support. On the cusp of 500,000 COVID-19 deaths and nearly 1 year into the pandemic that devastated the economy, saw rising unemployment, shuttered businesses, and shattered families, Democrats will try to remain united and pass one more massive $1.9 trillion relief bill, testing the party's ability to deliver for their new president and lead together. Bottom line, the next 3 weeks will give an early glimpse into how the Democrats' moderates and progressives work together, who is willing to make good on their threats to torpedo legislation, and who is willing to set aside their political grievances in the name of the bigger picture. The goal is to pass the bill and get it signed by March 14th. Everything has to go smoothly for that to happen. One party, having the House, Senate, and White House, is never as easy as it looks, and that's true even when talking about legislation that is overwhelmingly popular with the American public. When you ask members on the fence why they are voting for a bill that includes provisions they may not be so keen on, their answer is simple. You cannot vote against Biden's first big ask, and you certainly can't vote against it when it polls like this package does. What you'll see in the House this week. The House Budget Committee is going to meet at 1 p.m. Eastern Time today to mark up their 591-page bill and work to pass it out of committee. The markup will be an opportunity for Republicans to message against the bill, rail against the increase in health care subsidies, attack provisions that provide funding to humanities, the arts, and the preservation of Native American languages, which they will argue have nothing to do with coronavirus, and rail against the overall price tag of the package. They'll offer amendments that we don't expect to pass, and then when everyone has had enough, there will be a vote to advance the bill out of committee and send it to the floor. The final vote on the package on the floor will be later this week, likely Friday or Saturday. Novavax says enrollment of its Phase 3 COVID-19 vaccine trial in U.S. and Mexico is complete. From CNN Health's Jacqueline Howard. The biotechnology company Novavax announced on Monday that it has completed enrollment of its PREVENT-19 trial, a Phase 3 study of its COVID-19 vaccine in the United States and Mexico. The trial has enrolled 30,000 volunteers across 118 locations, according to the announcement. In January, Novavax announced that early results from a Phase 3 trial in the UK show its coronavirus vaccine has an efficacy of 89.3%. The full enrollment of PREVENT-19 is another important step in building a body of evidence to demonstrate that NVX-CoV-2373 will be safe and effective across diverse representative populations. Gregory M. Glenn, president of research and development for Novavax, said in the company's announcement. The company's announcement also included the diversity breakdown of its trial participants, with 20% identifying as Latinx, 13% as Black, 6% as Native American, and 5% as Asian American. The announcement noted that 13% of volunteers are 65 and older. Sanofi and GSK start Phase 2 trial of their vaccine, and Phase 3 could begin by April. From CNN's Jamie Gumbrett. Sanofi and GlaxoSmithKline said Monday they had begun a Phase 2 trial of their COVID-19 vaccine candidate, and if results are positive, a Phase 3 study could start in the second quarter of 2021. The protein subunit vaccine uses Sanofi's recombinant antigen technology with a GlaxoSmithKline adjuvant, an immune booster. The Phase 2 study will include 720 volunteers age 18 and older in the United States, Honduras, and Panama. The trial will assess the dosage of the company's vaccine. Three different antigen doses will be tested with a fixed adjuvant dose, and two injections will be given 21 days apart. Phase 1-2 trials showed the vaccine candidate elicited an immune response in younger adults that's comparable to patients who recovered from COVID-19, but the vaccine did not produce the desired immune response in older adults. The Phase 2 trial will include equal numbers of adults ages 18 to 59 years and 60 years and above. Over the past few weeks, our teams have worked to refine the antigen formulation of our recombinant protein vaccine based on learnings from our initial Phase 1-2 study. Thomas Triumphi, Executive Vice President and head of Sanofi Pasteur, said in a statement, "We are confident that our vaccine candidate has strong potential, and we are very encouraged by the latest preclinical data." The company said the vaccine could be available in the fourth quarter if trial results are positive and the vaccine is authorized. In statements, the company said Sanofi has begun work against new coronavirus variants, which will be used to inform next stages of the Sanofi GSK development program. "There's still huge amounts we don't know about long-term COVID," by CNN's Teresa Waldrop. From Washington State to Florida, from California to Massachusetts, facilities are opening to help the growing number of Americans who suffer from COVID-19 symptoms many months after their diagnosis. Just a little more than a year into the pandemic, it's not clear how many COVID-19 patients go on to develop what's called long-term COVID, or long COVID. A recent study that included mostly people who had just mild cases found 30% were reporting symptoms as long as 9 months after contracting the virus. Other studies have found a higher percentage. And almost every day that doctors work with these COVID long haulers brings new revelations about the syndrome, which manifests itself in a vast array of symptoms in patients of all ages and of every health status pre-COVID. "We now realize it goes way beyond the standard post-viral syndrome," said Dr. William Lee, a physician of internal medicine and founder of the Angiogenesis Foundation, a nonprofit that focuses on the role of blood vessels in diseases. "The symptoms can last for 9 months, and we're going on to a year now. We're still seeing new symptoms unfold," said Lee, a vascular biologist who has been researching COVID for almost a year. "Evidence looks good that vaccines will reduce virus transmission," says UK minister. From Amy Cassidy in Glasgow. "There appears to be positive news that vaccinations will reduce the transmission of COVID-19, according to UK vaccines minister Nadhim Zawawi. Speaking to Sky News Monday morning, Zahawi said, "Suffice to say, the evidence looks good. The Oxford team demonstrated their own evidence of cutting transmission by two-thirds." He was referring to a study by the University of Oxford that suggests the Oxford-AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine appears to substantially reduce transmission of the virus, rather than simply preventing symptomatic infections. Zahawi also mentioned other evidence on reduced transmission thanks to vaccinations that Prime Minister Boris Johnson will outline later today as he announces England's roadmap out of lockdown. England would not be in a position to ease lockdown if we're not confident that the vaccines program is really beginning to bear fruit, Zahawi added. And that is your coronavirus update for this Monday, February 22nd, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael. Once again, let me say that we are very happy that once again we're able to provide you with not only our coronavirus updates, but also the newspapers. Hopefully, this week, everything will return back to normal now that we have internet connectivity to our studios. Here's what's coming up next. We'll be bringing you the magazine, Health Magazine, to take us up to 2 o'clock, and then we'll have the national news from USA Today. At 3 o'clock, we will once again bring you the local news program, Updated. Here's what's coming up from the Midland Reporter Telegram that our volunteers have been reading. Record cold run ends in Midland. Sun warms Midland after 221 hours of freezing temperatures. Energy. Peyton says discussion needed about Basin's role in reliability of Texas grid. Energy. Frigid weather heats up commodity prices. Superintendent Ramsey's former district knows what Midland ISD is getting. An opinion column from Stuart Doreen. MISD's new leader deserves a clean slate. Devon CEO says worst is behind us. ERCOT reports record for sales. And West Texas Food Bank distributed 471,000 pounds of food before storm. From the Odessa American. Lottery set for Odessa IDEA campuses. Warming up. Big thaw is finally here. Odessa Police Department chief provides shooting details. Officers placed on standard leave as Rangers investigate. Vaccines continue this week. Ratliff immunizations begin Wednesday for first shots. Helping out. Pandemic spurred Sarah Vannon to action. New doctor helped organize community stakeholders. Pawn shop shifts to ammo store. And abuse and neglect with pandemics. Those articles and more coming out of our local newspapers at 3 o'clock. At 6 o'clock, the Wall Street Journal. Once again, thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you for your patience as we've had connectivity problems the past 7 or so days with the Recording Library studio and radio station. And also, thank you for putting up with my voice, which seems to be a little gravelly today. We'll be back again tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock for another coronavirus update. In the meantime, stay warm and safe and have a great day.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 73 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-50s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 73 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-50s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 2 p.m.
Hello, this is Melanie, and I'm reading articles from today's USA Today, Tuesday, February 23rd, 2021. Starting with the money section, under the money line column, there are three short articles. First, Taco Bell is testing crispy chicken sandwich taco. Taco Bell will soon enter the chicken sandwich war. The fast food chain announced Monday that it will test the crispy chicken sandwich taco starting March 11th in Nashville, Tennessee, and Charlotte, North Carolina, ahead of a nationwide debut later in 2021. The sandwich taco will be available for a limited time at participating locations in Nashville and Charlotte for $2.49. There is also a spicy version. Second item in that column, British court sides with Uber drivers in their ruling. Uber drivers in Britain should be classed as workers and not self-employed, the United Kingdom Supreme Court ruled on Friday in a decision that threatened its business model and holds broader implications for the so-called gig economy. The ruling entitles Uber drivers to benefits such as paid holidays and the minimum wage, handing defeat to the ride-hailing giant in the culmination of a long-running legal battle. The Supreme Court's seven judges unanimously rejected Uber's appeal against the lower court ruling, which had found that two Uber drivers were workers under British law. Uber, which has 65,000 active drivers in the United Kingdom, had argued that the two drivers who brought the case were independent contractors. And last item in that column, Dairy Queen cancels the annual Free Cone Day. Dairy Queen announced on its Facebook page that it has made the difficult decision to cancel this year's Free Cone Day. The event was postponed in 2020 because of the coronavirus pandemic. Given the state of COVID-19, we've made the difficult decision to cancel this year's event with your safety and the safety of our crew members in mind, the company said in their statement. New item. Emotional toll rises for the COVID-19 unemployed. This by Charisse Jones. When Sandra Fowler lost her job as a hotel manager in March, she thought of the many homeless people sleeping on the streets of Tucson, Arizona, and feared she would soon be among them. I could mentally see myself on the street, she said, said Fowler, who was 58 years old. That type of anxiety is what kept me up at night. I was planning on being homeless because I didn't know how I was going to make it. It took Fowler 8 months to find a job in a shipping and packing store that replaced her previous $42,000 a year salary with a part-time position that pays $12 an hour. Her wages are barely enough to keep a roof over her head and not enough to steadily put food on the table. Every day I have to go to work and put on a smile for strangers when I'm literally breaking inside because my finances are just totally out of whack. Mentally, it's going to take me a while to get back to a place where I feel safe financially, where I know I'm going to be okay. The physical toll of COVID-19 is stark, with more than 484,000 dead and over 27 million infected in the U.S. But among the millions of Americans who lost their jobs during the economic downturn sparked by the pandemic, or who have seen their hours and wages cut, the toll on mental health is also widespread. According to a new survey from the Pew Research Center, 70% of those who are jobless say being out of work has left them more stressed out. Over 5 in 10 said they were dealing with more mental health challenges, such as anxiety and depression. And 81% said they'd felt adrift, fought more with loved ones, or experienced other emotional issues since losing their jobs. Not only is unemployment putting people in a more vulnerable financial situation, but our survey found it's also having a negative impact on their emotional well-being, said Kim Parker, Pew's Director of Social Trends Research and co-author of the report. In part, that's because what we do affects how we see ourselves. Unemployment at any time takes a significant toll because employment is connected to identity and self-worth, said Robin Smith, a psychologist who is counseling patients who are struggling